Welcome to Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news, trends, and hottest topics that focus on advances in cybersecurity and cyber industry economics. Our expert yet down-to-earth hosts make cybersecurity straightforward. They ask the tough questions and make this challenging topic something that everyone can understand. Our candid approach lets guests open up on topics we would all like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at newcyberfrontier.com. That's www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join today's host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome back, everyone. Sean Murray, I am your host for the New Cyber Frontier. We have a special guest today, Noel Matchett from Information Security Incorporated. Welcome, Noel, to the show.
Thank you, Sean. It's great to be here.
Well, you know, we've known each other for many years, and you know, we've worked together, we collaborate together. I think we first met at the Impact conference out in Virginia many years ago. I used to attend as far back as maybe 20 years ago, and we've had lots of great conversations over the years, and we've been working together. Why don't you tell everybody who you are, what your background is?
Okay, briefly, my initial training was in mathematics, probability theory. Very early on, I worked at IBM in mathematical modeling, linear programming. I spent 19 years in the information security component of NSA. I started as a crypto mathematician, ran some operations research programs in R&D. Then I got into management. We developed some major programs to protect satellite and unsecured microwave that the Soviets at the time were lapping up. And then my organization was responsible for getting rid of plain text. So we initiated the data encryption standard program, which was the first publicly endorsed algorithm at NSA. NIST got a lot of the credit, but NSA ticked it off. They wrote Fed Standard 1027, which was FIPS 140. And also at the very end, I was the area executive and director for data network security, but I developed the first fully secure portable voice encryption. After that, I started ISI, Information Security. We're a boutique consulting firm. We look at security vulnerabilities. We do export consulting in EAR and ITAR. We actually have patent and IP. And one of my colleagues, John Hershey, he has over 200 US patents. We have a successor to DES called SuperDES that he and I have. And a while back, we beat 23 other consulting firms and won a major contract to do a national security information strategy for a major Gulf ally. And then just recently started one company, Sentinel ITP, to concentrate on CUI, controlled unclassified information. So that's just a little brief history of my background.
Yeah, so a cryptologist by trade and back in the Cold War days. I know,
and it's
you
still happening.
Yeah, and I know one of the discussions we've had, you have several patents when you were with NSA for various crypto, don't you?
Well, it's actually after I left. The funny thing was, I guess we can say it now, is when we developed the KY40, which was the first portable secure voice, we took it into a very senior official, and he loved it. He said, I've used this in hotel rooms all around the world. Well, you say, wait a minute. You're protecting the voice after it gets encrypted. What the heck do you do with the space and the mics? And so actually, I couldn't get anybody interested in NSA. So after I left, we put in a bunch of research, and they had a patent called NoiseBath, which actively uses computer generated and artificial voice and synthetic voice and real voices with some proprietary algorithms that you play for active masking, because today it's impossible to debug stuff. Anyway, that was one. And then the SuperDes, and then there was one, actually a biometric control system, where we were asked to do something for Las Vegas hotel rooms. Could you gamble from there? And the problem there was, if anybody under 21 hit a button, it was illegal. So if you had something in a hotel room, you had to verify 100% of the time that the person at the terminal was authorized. So we had something where you could continuously verify someone. A patent had a thumbprint reader and a mouse that you could click to bind that. That was the one patent we never made a penny on, but we thought it was a good one.
That's a great idea. You know, this is great information. We're going a little bit back in history with Noel Matchett from Information Security Incorporated. We're going to be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to the new Cyber Frontier. My name is Sean Murray. We have Noel Matchett from Information Security Incorporated. He just gave us a little bit about his background. A cryptologist by trade, back during the Cold War, and still fighting the battle today with the current threats. So, you know, we were having a conversation prior to the session about, you know, what we were going to discuss, and you've done a lot of work in the insider threat area, you know, having been your tradecraft on the cryptologist side. What are your thoughts about where we're at today, given the circumstances with COVID-19 and some of the challenges that we're seeing people adopting new technology? What are your thoughts there, Noel?
Well, insider threat has always been a concern historically. Today's environment is especially important to deal with it, because from my research, and when I first got into it, was actually at when I moderated Impact. And 4 or 5 years ago, the senior people said, we're going to implement an insider threat program, which was the Obama administration's executive order. It was started with WikiLeaks, and then the DOD got engaged when Aaron Alexis killed the 12 people at the Navy Yard. And then you had Snowden. What really, that got DOD and the IC community moving. But traditionally, insiders have always been a concern in two areas. One is the malicious, and the other is the unwitting. IBM engaged Ponemon to do their study on the 2019 data breach, cost of data breaches. The interesting thing there was 50% of the data breaches are 25% were outside attacks. But of the 50% that are insiders, that split between malicious and unwitting. So one of the statistics was 1% of the people will click on anything. They've said with people working from home now, the spear phishing attempts have gone up 600%, because people now, they don't necessarily have all the filters and they're under stress. One of the interesting statistics that I've been pushing for many years, I think insider threat is actually a bad name. It's really more insider behavior, because the statistics show that at any one time, perhaps 5% of the workforce could benefit from reference to an employee assistance program, be it drugs or alcohol or stress or a child going off the rails, whatever. And only 1% maybe are malicious. So if you can use your insider program to determine people in early stages of stress, whatever causes that, and then get them help. They're not going, if they have security clearances, even top secret SCI, if they follow the program, they're not going to lose their clearance. And that comes directly from Perry Russell Hunter, who's the senior person at Doha. So if you have a clearance and you fight it, his organization is the one that decides. So the key thing to me is, especially in today's world and environment, communicate with your staff, give them policies, have them engaged. Everybody's probably, your stress level is what, 2 to 10 times what it normally is, right? So this makes people vulnerable. They do unusual things. Doesn't mean they're malicious, but any organization should upgrade your training, upgrade your communications, upgrade your engagement in all forms. And if there are issues from a security standpoint, you know, Zoom is a big one now, and there are vulnerabilities reported in the public about Zoom, which they're trying to upgrade. So my understanding was some of the data goes through Chinese servers or is accessible. NSA just came out with, I'll shoot it to you, with an assessment of various video collaboration tools. It just came out today.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'd be so love to see that.
Try to use those. And I guess they follow good hygiene, especially today. But with your staff, expand the collaboration and communication, especially under stress. And then where people really are on the ragged edge, make sure you try to give them the help that you can.
Yeah, you know, these are really good points. You know, with everyone adopting new technology to be collaborative, as you mentioned, Zoom was one of the first ones to come out and offer their platform for free, I think, for 90 days. And so schools, you know, government organizations, you know, small business, everyone is trying to adopt the technology. We in our profession see cybersecurity was thrown out the window right away because everybody's trying to just pivot and be productive and be online. And so there's a responsibility, again, that insider threat. Configure your technology. You got to do usernames and passwords and authentication. You just don't do open live streaming with Zoom. We saw several instances, you know, on the news and within our circles where, you know, hackers are taking over live Zoom sessions that were open and not because they leave a certain streaming signature. Right. And then, of course, back to your mention where the privacy information was being shared out with Facebook, other social media platforms, no consent, no disclosure. Big lawsuit they got hit with on the 30th of March, filed in the U.S. Northern District Court in California. But one of the things that I'm kind of impressed with is Zoom has been really quick to turn around and address these issues as they've been coming about. Their stock price has surged to 115%. Wish I'd have known that was going to happen. I could have gotten some of my 401k back. But yeah, good conversation. So insider threat, it's not new, but you've got different issues now. Let's go back to the human element that you were talking about. Now, that work-life balance, we're starting to see from professionals and psychiatrists that work balance, that work-life balance, we're actually putting more hours in. We have less disruptions because we don't have all the drive-bys. Child abuse is up. Alcohol abuse is up. Anger issues are up. Domestic violence is up. All because everyone's having to quarantine and still maintain, you know, some sense of employment if you can. So that just adds to that stress and that need that you were just talking about to have some type of intervention available and get out. I know when I came back from the UK, I was under 2 weeks of mandatory quarantine. And I'll tell you, the first day after, I just got in my car and I drove around for an hour and came back home just to get out of the house. So, you know, valid points. So, you know, what do you think moving forward after, you know, some states are starting to open things back up? What do you see is the biggest challenge for workforces trying to, and I'm not talking retail, I'm not talking hospitality, bars, restaurant, I'm talking about the regular workforce going back to work. What do you think is going to be the biggest challenges? I think we're going to learn a lot of lessons from this pandemic.
Yeah, hopefully there'll be improved communication, Sean. To me, that's one of the big, you know, one of the things that's happened during the sheltering in place, neighbors are helping neighbors. You know, people are trying to, I mean, with the lack of personal protection equipment, you have private people using their 3D printers to print masks. You have folks sewing, you know, just face masks and things like this. So from the insider threat perspective, one of the most challenging things is for a colleague to report on another colleague. I mean, if you go back in the history of espionage, oh, well, I knew that they were doing that, but from all kinds of people, you know, and people just said, oh, they're a good guy. Well, if you feel somebody's under stress or something just isn't right, and if your program, as I said, tries to identify people who are not malicious under stress, then perhaps you're more willing to report these anomalies, because that's really where it comes. You know, the eyes and ears of your colleagues are probably the best indicators you can get, but nobody wants to have somebody lose their job, right? So they'll be quiet. So if you can say, look, I'm really going to help this person. Their behavior just is not as not their usual behavior. They're anomalous things. Yeah, everybody is under stress sometimes, but this appears to be more serious. Maybe speak to them. Or if you have a good program in the organization, which is supposed to be an integration, you know, of HR, of security, of legal, of operations, then have a way to either approach the person or them and say, look, this person may need help. Maybe it's just a mentor, right, who can come in. On the other hand, if you look at the cases where people have really flipped over to the dark side, you know, disgruntled people, if they bad performances, or if they've been treated unfairly, either in their mind or legitimately. I had a good friend, somebody wanted her shift. And so they made up a bunch of lies, deliberate lies that went up to the vice president of the company. Well, the good news was when she hung tough, and they paid her to go away and not continue. But, you know, sometimes you'll get malicious reports, which are just as important to validate, is this legitimate or not?
Right.
So after we get back, you know, hopefully from the people side, there were some interesting things from that Poneman report. They looked at things which increase the cost to an organization of a breach and things that decrease. Things that decrease the cost are training. You know, as I know you do a lot of that. In addition, do you have a business incident response team? Do you have a plan? And do you test it? Do you use encryption on key things, end to end? And do you do development in a secure environment? On the other hand, they found things that increase the cost of breaches are transitions to the cloud. And I've said for many years, anytime an organization goes through a transition, that, that's a vulnerability. But transitioning to the cloud is has increased. Third-party people, vendors, you know, like the HVAC company, and very complex systems that people don't understand. And then, if you just don't comply with the things you're supposed to comply, people are out of compliance. Those are all things from the cost standpoint, from a management standpoint, increase the cost. Yeah. So when we get back, you know, you need to look at both the people and you need to look at the environment that your organization's in.
Yeah, hopefully people are collecting information and data on what's going on during this significant transition. I think the data analysts in all industries are going to be busy for years and years. So we're going to come back, and our guest today is Noel Matchett for Information Security Incorporated. We'll be right back with more of Noel after this message. Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information. Welcome back, New Cyber Frontier. I'm Sean Murray. We're talking to Noel Matchett from Information Security Incorporated. Noel's been giving us his perspective on, where he's come from, the insider threat, cryptologist by trade. We're talking about, with this pandemic, some of the new challenges, focusing on the social aspect of the employees and how they provide risk to the organization. You're giving us a perspective on some key things that we're going to learn from right away. One of them is that you hit key on, and I'm doing a lot of work with my clients right now. I've got a couple that we were literally just finished their back at the end of last year, just finished their continuity of operations plan, did a couple tabletops, and they were prepared. They're in really good shape. They went to a mobile workforce. It was an easier transition. There's a couple people in the office, and that was a success story. But now we're actually seeing a lot of people that, they blew the dust off their continuity plan and they haven't updated it in years, or they didn't have one. Talk about how important that is now. It's always been important, but why is it important now, Noel?
Sean, I was an old target shooter from high school on rifle team. And one of my clients said people under stress, like say a law enforcement person in a critical life-threatening situation, you lose your small muscles. You're going to about it. So, I mean, and I think, especially since we don't know, this COVID-19, it could be around forever. It's like H1N1 flu, the Spanish flu. So I think there's going to be a if you don't practice, that's the lesson that my colleague gave me. He goes to the range, he teaches law enforcement, practice. Same thing with your business continuity and your incident response teams. Now you may not know the exact thing, right? But we know that, take a look at just
climate change, the floods, tornadoes, and things. If you have something in a floodplain, or you've got in Tornado Alley, or an earthquake zone, do you have some kind of a plan? Are your things backed up? You know, after 9/11, a lot of companies went under. And a good friend of mine, Roger Callahan, he was working with the banks when they looked at how resiliency. You know, where do I have my critical information? Can I retrieve it? And how quickly do I need to retrieve it? So organizations that are in, like say, the credit card business or something, they need it quickly. Other organizations is long term. Some you just say, can I get it back at all? If I lose my primary headquarters, how do I reconstruct? They said, from the first World Trade Center bombing, you know, back in the 90s, 50% of the companies that were there went out of business. And that just cut the comms. So backup, how do you, especially now with, you know, ransomware hasn't gone away. Healthcare is one of the big healthcare and the states and local governments are one of the big targets. So you really need to keep that stuff up to date. And again, as you know, the training that you know your company does and other companies do, you just can't. Now maybe you can have the people develop. You know, there's a difference between old folks like me and the younger folks that go in. And so develop the training exercises and things. You know, people love to play games and simulation. I work on simulations too. It's that they develop within your company, and it can be a living thing. It's not a static thing. You know, the old security posters, you know, that they're static there and you put up. I mean, that lasts maybe for 2 minutes, but try to get something interactive. You know, I used to say for those in the cleared community, many times you don't know how much is out there. People who are waiting for clearances, I would suggest to the security people, take these people, have them go out on social media, see what they can find about your organization that's out there, from maybe people who have posted their resumes. And I think most management would be amazed to see what their public profile looks like to even a semi-dedicated effort about what things they're working on, what's important, who their key people are, et cetera. So, but you know, as we said, Sean, practicing. Now from the IT people and things like this, I've been in situations where the management just wouldn't give the IT people the resources.
That was one of those guys a long time ago. I remember those days. Well,
what do you give IT? No. You're going to give them IT. In a classified line, but where you know someone said, I need this circuit. Well, if some senior four-star or three-star needs a circuit, he's going to get a circuit. It may not be encrypted like it's supposed to be, but it's going to be there. Well, your people will do that. I had one case where we went and did a security vulnerability, and I went to the head of their local IT, and I said, what are you doing with your audit trail. Oh, I said, I haven't turned off. Why? I don't have enough people to look at them. So what difference does it make? So it's management's responsibility to give the security people and the IT folks enough tools to do the job. Because what are you really talking about? From insider threat to all this, it's protecting the organization's assets. Now, I take a very broad view of assets. Be it people, be it IP, be it your R&D, be it your customers, and the government, your mission ability. So you really have to look from a senior management point of view, What risk am I willing to run against the value and ability of my assets to do my job? That can be a major trade-off. But if you don't think of it holistically, some key points, and of course, the adversary. You know, we're the one country, intelligence community, but just about every other country in the world can task their intelligence community to collect intelligence, both against government and in industry. So whether you're in government or industry, how secure you are and how you protect your most critical assets, especially in this time, you know, with working from home and the virus and the extra stress, can be a survival. You know, it can be for a company, it can be a survival, and from the government, it can be, can I execute my critical mission?
You know, this is a conversation we could have for days. And we've got to be able to communicate the right information to leadership. So at the end of the day, you know, we talk about this. You've got to be able to balance information or cybersecurity or security in general with the needs of the business. And so, you know, when we take a look at the resources, even from the broad perspective of the people, the IT systems, 80% of your business processes are automated. And when 80% of your business processes are automated, you've got to take a look at the organization. Who's got the skill set, the tradecraft, your sysadmins, your netadmins, your software developers that are maintaining that infrastructure? You have to talk to them. You have to communicate to them, to your point. We're at the end of our half hour, and you know, we've been talking to Noel Matchett from Information Security Incorporated. Noel, any parting thoughts for our audience?
Well, I was just thinking, working from home, Sean, you probably have media. Maybe thumb drives or things. I would just caution everybody, make sure. It's very tough to erase that stuff. So, you know, you may have stuff when this comes back to the more normal. You want to make sure that you clean up after, you know, from either the paper and shredders or the media that you've stored critical information on.
Yeah, whether it be your home computer, whether it be a USB thumb drive, removable media, the cloud, Dropbox. I'm seeing lots of stuff that makes me nervous out there, but all great points. We've come to the end of our session. This is Sean Murray with the New Cyber Frontier. We've been talking to Noel Matchett from Information Security Incorporated. Noel, thank you for your contribution today, and stay safe out there.
Thank you for having me, Sean. I enjoyed it very much. And you too.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to New Cyber Frontier. Remember to follow or like our post and circulate each new show to your networks. We keep you informed, bring you the latest news, explore new trends, and find the hottest topics. With New Cyber Frontier, you don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert. Just get plugged in. We encourage you to get involved. Tell us what topics interest you and join our mailing lists. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. That's newcyberfrontier.com. Check out our previous interviews and please let us know if there are any topics that you would like to hear discussed. See you next time on New Cyber Frontier.